few of us can begin to imagine what life is like in Weed, California at the moment. For the majority of the residents, there's been no direct change, but the wildfire that swept through part of town last week destroyed 150 homes and two churches and the library and damaged the elementary school and the town's largest employer. Fortunately, nobody was seriously hurt, but the town itself certainly bears a scar that will take time to heal. Life will return to normal, but certainly not all at once. Today we'll catch up on the current situation in Weed on this week in which schools reopen to students. So one of our guests is Elisa Cummings, the principal at Weed Elementary School. Elisa, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi.
Hi. We also have with us Sergeant Justin Mayberry from the Weed Police Department. Welcome to you, Sergeant.
Good morning.
So back to fire day. Tell us a little bit about what happened, where you were. Were you on duty that day, Sergeant?
No, actually I had actually picked up my own kids from school and was walking home, could see the smoke from town. My kids don't go to Weed Elementary. Called into town and got called into work, got in as quickly as possible to help out.
And it seemed like, and certainly from the perspective of people who weren't there in town, like it all happened in minutes. I mean, what was the actual timeline like?
It was very fast-moving fire once it got started. By the time I arrived on scene, probably 15 minutes after the initial puffs of smoke, the fire was all the way into the neighborhood around the Weed Elementary and Weed High School by that point.
It really was that fast then?
Yes.
Wow. And so, Elisa, what was going on at the elementary school? Was the day ending there?
No, we get out at, our primary students get out at 2:15 and our 4th through 8th students get out at 3. So it was just a normal day until our maintenance supervisor saw some smoke and we assessed the situation and decided we needed to evacuate and evacuate quickly.
And where did you take the kids? Where they?
Our evacuation drill is to, first our fire drill is to meet on the playground, make sure we have attendance taken, and then to head to Weed High School. So that's the plan we followed.
Wow. So it sounds like some prior preparation really paid off in this case.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We estimated the time from phone conversations that we made the all call to evacuate at 1:43, and we were headed to Weed High School, had the campus evacuated by 1:50.
I can't imagine what that's like, though, trying to reassure all these kids when you're probably feeling some fear yourself about what's going on around you.
Yeah, absolutely. Our older students did really well. You know, when you practice a fire drill, they're horsing around, or an off-campus drill, everyone kind of is, you know, just messing around. But with the seriousness of the situation, our middle school students really stepped up and helped some of the younger kids, you know, as we're walking, they're crying, holding their hands, just getting to where we needed to go.
So the job got done. And Sergeant Mayberry, you mentioned that you got called into work. So, I mean, how many people between police and fire departments were available to handle evacuations, to knock on doors or do whatever you had to do at that point?
At the time of the initial fire, I'm not sure how many were on, but by the time within 20 minutes to half an hour, we had multiple agencies on scene. Almost every Weed PD officer, we had Siskiyou County Sheriff's Department, we had Mount Shasta Police Department, Lake Shastina. We even had units responding from Aetna, Wairika PD, CHP. It was a joint effort, and everybody came together pretty well.
So basically, it was really an all-hands-on-deck kind of thing.
Yeah, pretty much. We needed everybody there to evacuate. And the fact that the fire was moving so fast, it was the fire guys were handling the fire, and we were handling the evacuation. It was pretty miraculous that there wasn't anybody injured.
That is the amazing part. I mean, were you actually able to get at least a knock on everybody's door before the fire got there?
We were. We do have several stories of, in particular, students that were able to run home. One that sticks in my mind is a student that ran home. His mother's a nurse and works nights, and she was asleep in the house, and they did end up losing their house had he not been able to get home. And if we had not known she was in there and couldn't wake her up by knocking on the door, she may have lost her life.
Well, so it really was a close call in a lot of cases.
Yes, there's many stories like that.
I'm still trying to figure out how the fire managed to destroy so many houses without anybody getting hurt. I mean, we talk about getting seriously hurt, but, I mean, did people have cuts, scrapes, bruises, that sorts of thing?
We did call down to the local hospital to find out what kind of injuries may have come into the emergency room. I believe they reported 5, and they were anywhere from splinters to, I believe one person had a scratched retina, something to that fact, but nothing severe.
Wow, that's amazing. We're talking to Sergeant Justin Mayberry from the Weed Police Department and Elisa Cummings, the principal at Weed Elementary School, about where they were last week and where things move this week now that life is going to begin pointing in the direction of returning to normal in Weed. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 around the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So let's be clear. I mean, the city of Weed still exists. And if, for example, you live in the untouched part of town, are you even aware of the devastation elsewhere, Justin?
Yeah, they're obviously aware. It's had a major impact on the city. It's had a major impact on just traveling around the city because it kind of cut right through several neighborhoods. And so the people that still have residences on that side have to travel through the burn area just to get home. We do have checkpoints still in place as a precaution to keep just the residents in those areas.
Which brings up the question about, since pictures and videos of the burn area got out so fast, I mean, how much of an effort were you able to put up to keep people away and try to keep them safe?
The people in the areas that were releasing photos, most of them remained in the area. We did evacuate. We advised them to evacuate if they chose not to. Many people sheltered in place at the same field where the students had been prior to them being evacuated out of the city. The fire never reached that point. They just kind of stayed at the baseball field.
All right. So, Elisa Cummings, for you at Weed Elementary School, you'd evacuated the kids over to the high school field. What happens then? Because then school is essentially over for the day somewhere in this process. And what do you do with kids who, in some cases, have no homes to return to?
Well, as we were on the football field, it was kind of scary as to what to do next, and until a first responder or someone responded, I know Sergeant Steve Shannon and CHP Officer Jared Blankenship were the first that stood out in my mind, and they advised that we should load up our buses and evacuate, and that's what we did. And then coming back to school, we have at this time 24 students displaced, which is better than what we first had thought. So, you know, we've had counselors on campus this whole week. The donations are pouring in. We're making sure we're working with the organizations, the volunteer organizations in the city to place people in homes or, you know, offer assistance any way we can.
And so 24 students displaced out of a total school enrollment of what?
253.
Okay. So not quite 10% of the school population.
No. And some families are just out of their homes temporarily until, you know, smoke damage and their insurance gets in and does some things.
And so are they staying in hotels, staying with friends? Do we really know what?
Actually, the Weed community has really come together to place people in homes, or they're doubled up. I know that my secretary here at the school has two families living with her until they find a place. That's just how our community works in Weed. We all come together to find homes, and I don't believe any of our students are staying in motels at this time or hotels. They have a place to live. I know someone is out at the trailer park by McDonald's. I know we have one family there, and temporarily until they find a house to get into.
So you mentioned having counselors on hand. So, I mean, how do you initiate discussions of what happened in town with the kids? And, you know, even we're talking 24 of the students displaced, and so the majority of them not. But still, I mean, this is an impact on the town.
Yeah, it is. We opened with an assembly for our older students. Our younger students' counselors were in the classroom that morning, kind of leading discussions on, you know, why we practice drills. Most of the panic that I remember seeing was in our younger students, our kindergarten and first graders. Some of them wouldn't even move at times when we were evacuating. They were just sitting there very scared. So we didn't want to sit and have a discussion with them and relive the whole situation again. So I let the counselors who are trained kind of take that piece on while we worked with the older kids. And we had a lot of discussion in the classrooms that day about fear and hope and rebuilding and compassion. And they've handled the situation really well.
There must be a line to walk between trying to talk it out and talking too much about it. How do you find that line?
Well, I think this week we're just kind of playing it by ear, and next week we'll get back into our regular routine. We still have students who are still home, or parents are attending school with them. They're still afraid, and I think that's a normal feeling. but we need to, you know, getting back to normal, it's easy to say that, but then when you drive through town, there's nothing, you know, especially on your way up the hill and looking around on our playground, all the homes we used to look at are gone. So we're giving ourselves this week to kind of debrief and recover, and hopefully, you know, counselors will still be available. We have a full-time counselor on campus anyway, and she's got her finger on some students that she's keeping an eye on, and as the teachers are too.
Lisa, there was one portables classroom completely destroyed at Weed Elementary and a few others damaged. Is that what the situation
was?
Yes,
our music room and our psychologist's office and the PE ball equipment room was completely burnt down. And then our primary wing, which is first through third and a 3-4 combination class. So six classrooms are we can't get into it this time. They're telling us by December. The worst room being a third grade classroom that the fire kind of hit the roof and went through there. But that's our extent of our damage. Our playground equipment is gone. Most of it. Some of it stands. The one piece of equipment the teachers were hoping would go, the one that causes all these accidents and fights, is still standing. But you know, that's all replaceable. Through insurance, we're just trying to keep kids, you know, away from it. We have fences up and, you know, taking them to the gym, trying to keep them from being out and around that.
Does it feel like you're getting to some level of normality again where you can have a regular school day again?
You just personally,
went back since Tuesday. No. Yeah, not for you, sure.
But I do see the kids. You know, they're helping with our donations that are coming in. Like I said, it's been a crazy week, and next week we'll resume volleyball games and cross-country practices. We've been kind of practicing during the school day to stay within the restrictions that the fire and police have asked us to. So that kind of is not normal, you know, having PE is volleyball practice. So next week I'm really hoping that it will be our regular schedules, you know, practice after school and start our games.
Lisa Cummings is the principal at Weed Elementary School. Sergeant Justin Mayberry is with us as well from the Weed Police Department. You can join us in the exchange as we talk about the process of pulling things back together in Weed after the devastating fire that destroyed 150 homes a week ago Monday. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782 or jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Paul in Grants Pass. Welcome to the exchange.
Good morning. Both of you deserve the highest recognition for stepping in and doing what needed to be done. That's my working definition of courage, and you guys expressed that and should be shown as exemplars of that model of courage. It's not being afraid. It's doing what needs to be done in the face of fear. So that's my comment. My question is two-part. First of all, where did the fire start? What caused it? And then what were the conditions that allowed it to spread through so many single-family dwellings so rapidly? Because it sounds like this really happened all in about, 15, 20 minutes?
That's about what we're talking about here. All right, thanks for the call and the comment and the question, Paul. Appreciate that. So, Justin, what about this? Obviously, this is something police and fire would probably work on together, starting with the fire folks. But what do we know at this point about the source?
Well, the sources, we have a pretty good handle on everything right now. We've got several agencies working on that. Cal Fire, Siskiyou County Sheriff's Department, and Weed Police Department are all have their investigators working it. There's many witnesses, obviously, that we have to talk to, and the case is still being put together under investigation, but we have a pretty good handle on what the cause was, but we're not releasing that as of yet.
Well, we can assume human-caused in some fashion, can't we, because there was no lightning in the area at the time.
I can say that there was no storms in the area that day.
Okay. We'll take that as a confirmation of something other than lightning. And how strong were the winds that day? Because Paul was talking about asking about how fast this could spread, and they were reported as very high.
Yeah. Speaking with the fire department, actually has their own, Cal Fire has their own weatherman, and the conditions were, as you can say, perfect for having a fire like this. 40-mile-an-hour gusts and humidity levels down to in the teens, so it was a prime situation. And then we've had obviously the drought conditions prior that have made everything so dry.
So when you guys were out there trying to get houses evacuated, were you seeing embers flying around you?
We were seeing explosions. We were seeing I know, and right by the elementary school, those firemen at the elementary school did a great job of saving that. I wouldn't believe, if you'd have told me at that time that they were going to save that school, I wouldn't have believed you. Tires melting to the street on vehicles, it was pretty hot.
We were just talking about the counselors at the school to help out the students. I mean, is there anybody coming in to help the people in public safety talk about what they've been through?
We do have a chaplain service available. We have our chaplain, and Siskiyou County Sheriff's Department has their chaplain available also if anybody needs to speak with them. The Cal Fire guys are often have debriefings that after many a house fire to help the firefighters with that aspect.
Just on number, we keep using the number 150. I've seen 150 and 148 in the last couple of days about the actual number of homes destroyed. Do you have a clear fix on that one, Justin?
The homes are, the total on that, the current total is 143. The number you're seeing is including commercial structures. We lost the Great Northern and building, which housed our public library, and we also lost the recreational center next door. And we also lost an old water tank that's affected our city's public works system as far as water flow that we're working to mitigate right now.
Oh, wow. So what do you have to do with that water tank out of commission?
We're working on getting approval and some waivers. That's what it's going to take to get a new tank in quickly, and that will hopefully bring us back up to capacity. At this time, we don't have the ability, if we were to have a structure fire in the downtown area, the flow rate would not support a fire effort. We're supplementing that with having tanker trucks stationed in specific areas to facilitate, and just in case there was a house fire.
Alisa, you had mentioned that there's going to be a few steps here before you can start the construction, but have the insurance folks at least been out to look at the school and take stock of everything there, take the pictures, make the reports, et cetera?
Yes, we have a restoration crew on campus. Before we could even begin, they had to assess the safety, and then all the other rooms had smoke damage, and so they had to come in and clean and deodorize and air out, and that was the week. They started right on Wednesday, the week after the fire. So Monday the fire happened, and on Wednesday they were beginning that process.
And so since school opened again Tuesday morning, was Monday kind of a real hectic day to get all the last-minute preparations in place?
Well, Monday my staff, all staff was on campus, and our job was to help the teachers who wouldn't be able to return to their classroom to move class. You couldn't move any of the furniture. We couldn't take anything out of that whole wing. So rounding up other furniture and bulletin boards and just getting their classroom to look as normal as a classroom would look. Moving library tables into classrooms and making school ready for first through third grade students who were returning because they're not going to their normal rooms.
You mentioned earlier about donations coming in. One gets the sense of truckloads and a huge outpouring of stuff and just good feelings and money and everything coming Weed's way.
Absolutely. We had a family or a retired woman come in from Medford, I believe, yesterday. And she had six envelopes of cash that she wanted to go to families. And it was like $2,400. Each envelope contained $400 that she wanted us to distribute to our most needy families. It's stuff like that. Gift cards have been pouring in, donations. We've kind of allowed the clothing and food donations to be distributed downtown at the distribution centers. But last night we had a U-Haul truck full of books and backpacks, and it's just amazing.
That really warms the heart.
It does.
Sergeant Mayberry, we're just talking about the distribution center downtown. Where do people go to get the things they need in Weed? And I understand, too, that the one of the centers, the one that allows you to get your license restored and things like that, at the College of the Siskiyous, is open through tomorrow?
Yes, that's correct. The local assistance center is located at the old Life Science building at College of the Siskiyous. You can go in there and meet with federal, state, and local entities. There's also nonprofit groups there to help if you need anything in the way of food or assistance. That's open from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. They'll reevaluate tomorrow to see if there's a continued need for that.
And I have to wonder if you lost, for example, your driver's license or any of the important papers of your life, do you have to pay the fees again?
They were working on getting waivers for those, specifically for the DMV items. I can't speak as to every agency, but I believe that there's many waivers available. Mm.
But the fact is that you get all the agencies together under essentially one roof there at College of the Siskiyous.
Correct.
Let's. So what about the what's going on in the Byrne neighborhood right now? And have the insurance adjusters all moved through there already? And what needs to happen for preparation other than financial to get the neighborhood ready for construction crews?
Well, what's going on there, there are insurance adjusters in the neighborhoods. Yesterday, two nights ago, it was announced that in an unprecedented move, the state of California is going to pick up 100% of the cleanup if we so choose that option. Normally they pay 75%. The city is left with the 25% of that bill. They understand that in Siskiyou County, many of the smaller towns could not handle that, so they've agreed to pick up 100%. What property owners need to do is they need to come down and either fill out a right of entry permit, which means they want the city, through CalRecycle, which is a government agency, to clean up their lot at no cost. If they did have insurance, the state is asking that, say, if you had a $20,000 policy and it takes $12,000 to clean up your lot, that you pay, your insurance will pay the $12,000 back to the state, and that's how they're going to recoup some of those fees. If the property owner wants to have a private local contractor do that, that's more than fine. They can come in and fill out a denial of right of entry form, and they can handle that through their insurance company, or, you know, if for those that don't have insurance, they would have to pay out of pocket. But that's why we've joined up with CalRecycle through the government, state of California, because some of these homeowners didn't have insurance. So this is going to give them an option to get their lots cleaned up.
All right. Well, a lot of work left to be done, but a lot of work has happened already, and an amazing outpouring of emotion and goods and cash, as Elisa Cummings was telling us about. Elisa Cummings is the principal at Weed Elementary School. Thank you so much for your time. And Sergeant Justin Mayberry from the Weed Police Department, thank you as well. And best of luck to both of you and everybody else in Weed. That'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. Thank you for listening.